I'd like to call this meeting to order of the February 8th Jobs and Economic Development Committee. And we would like to have somebody that has thoroughly read and understood the minutes from February 1st.
Mr. Chairman, they are excellent minutes.
Thank you. Representative Howes recommends that we approve the minutes from February 1st. Is there any corrections or additions that anybody has for the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of approving those minutes signify by saying aye.
Yeah. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Minutes pass. And now we are honored to have the Commissioner Phillips. Welcome to our committee. We're looking forward to hearing from you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I'm Mark Phillips. I'm the new deed commissioner. It was helpful. I did this in preparation, only in preparation for this committee. I did the Senate committee this morning.
Did you really?
So, and they found it helpful if I introduced myself a little bit before I started my presentation. So, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to do that again, a little bit about my background before I start. So, I was born and raised in Eveleth, Minnesota, so I'm a lifelong Minnesotan. I spent in my adult life, spent 30 years living in Virginia and raised my family there. So I've only been a transplant to the Twin Cities since 2005. out of my entire career, I spent about 28 years in some form of economic or community development activities. And I think the operative part of that that has to do with deed is that back in the early 80s when Governor Perpich was in the governor's office, I was the director of community and economic development at Iron Range Resources when Governor Dayton was the deed commissioner, and I had a lot of interaction with him, so I think that might have had something to do with me being here today. And so we worked on a lot of things back with Governor Perpich, and it was an exciting time in economic development, and I think I'm hoping that we're going to replicate some of those things because we came out of that recession in the 80s with some very positive job creation kinds of activities. So we hope to do that again. With that,
we're
I will...
We're looking for you to have you do that.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'll try. I'll just try to not get bogged down too much in this because I'd rather have interaction, but I will run through a few slides about our department so you can understand that it's a very complex place and we do a lot of different things, so I'll quickly do that. The mission of our department is to support economic success of individuals, business, and communities by improving opportunities for growth. So we deal with these three separate efforts, and our goals are for creating and retaining jobs, cultivating entrepreneurs, enhancing community vitality, strengthening the workforce, fostering self-sufficiency, and addressing economic change. And I just want to say that addressing economic change is a broad statement, but some of this is we do a lot of labor force and economic analysis and reporting. And that's what we do for the legislature, so that's an important activity in the department. Our economic development strategies are to retain and expand the existing Minnesota businesses, meet the workforce needs of Minnesota businesses, support the creation of new enterprises, attract new businesses from other states and countries, help communities enhance development opportunities and attract additional business investment, and pursue strategies that leverage partners to develop regional economies. This is just an organizational chart of the department to give you a flavor for how we're structured. I have a deputy, and then I have three division directors in the three very important areas: the Business and Community Development Division, Unemployment Insurance Division, in Workforce Development Division. In addition, off on the side is the it's kind of connected to the Business and Community Development, but also to my office is the Minnesota Trade Office. We're also connected to two separate authorities that were created by the legislature that are affiliated with DEED. These are the Public Finance Authority, which most of you are familiar with, that does the water, wastewater kinds of financing for communities. And then the new Office of Science and Technology that was created and is just really getting underway as we speak. And then we have a number of support staff. Just to give you a flavor for where our revenues come from, this is for the biennium, so it's a two-year look. We deal with about $76 million worth of general fund money, $588 million worth of federal funds, $81 million of workforce development money, unemployment benefits, about $2.6 billion. It's a big number now because of the recession. And we'll have some slides on the unemployment insurance later, and $63 million of other funds. Our business and community development division, I mentioned there's three major parts. Business and community development division consists of, we have the Minnesota Trade Office, I mentioned, our business development activities, our community finance activities, the whole job Z and business finance section, small business assistance, the small business development centers, which are throughout the state. And then again, we have these two authorities that we deal with in this section as well, the Public Finance Authority and the Science and Technology Authority. Just to give you a flavor for what's happened recently in this area, in the last year, we've assisted with over 50 major business expansions. These projects in total proposed about 3,000, over a little over 3,000 new jobs, and there was proposed private capital investment of about $2.4 billion associated with those 50 transactions. We provided $6.8 million to 62 small and medium-sized firms to help them stabilize and grow. And in addition, we consulted with over 3,100 small businesses, primarily through our small business development centers. We prepared 43 sites for new development statewide, with $15.2 million in cleanup and redevelopment funds. I have my most recent employment history was in the construction industry, and I was involved with one of the most high-profile projects in this brownfield area, the redevelopment of the Clyde Iron site in Duluth. I can tell you what a phenomenal thing that did for that whole part of the western part of Duluth, was cleaning up that old Clyde Iron site and redeveloping it. It's just a terrific project. Going on, we helped 57 communities renovate homes and businesses and invest in new infrastructure with about a little under $25 million worth of assistance. These are the small cities development block grants that you're probably familiar with. We funded $14.5 million in public infrastructure to support new business investment in 26 different cities throughout Minnesota. Most of these programs I'm speaking of here are primarily rural, in the, where these funds went in these three different areas. The new development tools that we received in 2010, and I wanted to point out a couple of them for you. The Angel Tax Credits, I think there was about $11 million authorized for the first year. $7 million have been appropriated to date. They leveraged a little under $30 million in private equity investment in 66 different companies. We think this program has really come out of the gate very successfully, and we hope that I think there's going to be a bill to make a few adjustments to it, the areas, the technical areas we found some issues with. But in all, this has been a very good program, and I've received a lot of good feedback from the companies that have gotten equity investment as a result of the Angel Tax Credits. There was a new research and development credit was expanded from 5 to 10%. It's a refundable credit and provided more eligibility, so we should be able to do more with that program.
Commissioner, Representative Mahoney has a question.
Commissioner, this is on the Angel Tax Credit. Is that $7 million to date today, or is that till January 1st? Because I know the credit was broken down by year versus fiscal
That's through the end of the calendar year, through December, that number.
Okay, so it was $7 million for the first 6 months that it was in place. And
correct.
Okay, thank you.
And I think that's a good point, though. I think that tells you the appetite for this kind of activity. It's really helped small business investment by private capital.
Representative Leidiger, you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, is it okay if we just go back to the one slide on page 7? Assisted with 50 major expansions in 2010, over $2.4 billion in proposed private capital investments. So that's $2.4 billion in investment.
Some kind of, Mr. Chairman, Representative, I believe, Mark, do you want to just... I believe that the number would be, if you look at the non-state part of the transaction, all financing, debt, and equity, it would be all that money together. Correct?
But that, Mr. Chairman, we're talking about 50 new projects, though. So, and then it looked like on the next, on slide 8, these are a few of them that don't add up to very much. That's a different program. I'm trying to understand this big figure of $2.6 billion in capital and proposed private capital investment, and I just quickly went through to see how that's broken up, and I don't see it anywhere.
Mr. Loftus, would you like to take a shot at that?
I will, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Loftus. I'm the Director of the Business and Community Development Division. Representative Leidiger, to your question, the number $2.4 billion is really private money involved in projects where we were providing technical assistance, information. We might have some financing involved in those projects, but that's a private investment number in specific companies that we've identified. The number on slide 8 is a reference of funding that we've provided for mostly infrastructure renovation projects across the state, mostly greater Minnesota, but some in the metro, where you would have prospective investment and job creation from that. But when we talk about page 7, we're talking about companies that we've been working with that we could identify proposed investment going forward. Those infrastructure investments, for the most part, don't connect directly to the page 7 number.
All right, I got to ask this. I'm new.
That's what we're here for. Take your time.
That 2.4 is public money, right?
No, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, Representative. Those are private dollars that those companies will be investing as they go forward on those projects.
All right, and so, okay, so you're assisting with 50 major expansions using $2.4 million of private money. Is that what you're saying here? And you're managing that?
Mr. Chairman,
I'm confused.
Representative, yes.
Commissioner.
So if you just took one of those 50, you'd have a component of state help, whether it be information, a little bit of financing piece. But then if you look at that overall one project, there's equity, there's other debt from private banks, there's a lot of private investment in that one project. If you totaled all 50 projects and just took the private part of that, took the state out, that would be the $2.4 billion. And we can get you some information on how we got to that number.
Well, I just needed that right. Explained. Well, I don't know if that was public money.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, it's a fair question, though, really. We're trying to emphasize that when the state does a deal or works on a business deal, we're trying to be the little piece of glue that maybe gets the deal put together, and it's primarily private money. That's our goal. The goal isn't to finance, be the primary financing of businesses. We're trying to provide maybe a little credit enhancement or a small loan that might tip the deal to get done. And not be the bank of
Thank
last
you.
Resort or anything like that.
Okay. Go ahead, Commissioner. Thank you.
Okay. I think the last thing on that slide on page 9 was the Science and Technology Authority was created. They received a small amount of money to begin planning. And I think that's an area that we'll be talking about in the future. They have some ideas for doing some research and development and some things like that that really kick off that effort. The Minnesota Trade Office, just some of the things in 2010. And I won't read all this for you, but they led a number of seminars and roundtables on educating Minnesota businesses about exporting. They talk about the trade missions. We're continuing to work with the China-Japan missions that Governor Pelini led, trying to make sure that the transactions that were originated out of those trade missions get completed. The Trade Office hosted 67 visiting officials, including ambassadors from Canada, Japan. I won't read all the countries. You can read those. We respond to a lot of requests from Minnesota businesses that would like to get involved in exporting. So part of our job is educating companies on how to get into the export game. Our Workforce Development Division. I'm not bashful about, I had this 28-year history in economic development, community development. I haven't had a long history in the workforce side. So I'm relying on a lot of key staff people to get me up to speed on this side in a hurry, and I've been trying to digest it all, so bear with me. But our Workforce Development Division is the largest as far as scale, just so you know. You know, if we have, say, 1,800 employees, probably 1,700 of them are, and some odd, are in the workforce side. And these are all our workforce centers, unemployment insurance, and things like that. Workforce Development Division provides adult services, services to businesses, the Job Skills Partnership Program, which is customized training, using a lot of times they use the local Minsky campuses and things like that to train businesses, employees. We do the disability determination for Social Security. Disability. We are involved in extended unemployment, or extended employment services, not unemployment. Independent living, state services for the blind, vocational rehabilitation, youth programs, and veteran employment services. The purpose of the Workforce Development Division is to connect job seekers with training, education, and jobs. It's also to connect businesses with the talent that we've identified. We assist businesses to enhance the skills of their incumbent workforce. That was that Job Skills Partnership Act that I mentioned program. We assist people with disabilities to get jobs and live independently. And we facilitate innovative initiatives to help grow regional economies. Part of the announcement the governor made last week down in Jackson, with the AGCO project down there, where they are adding, I think, 125 people to the already workforce they have in place of about 900. Part of that project, part of the reason they're here, is we provide the Job Skills Partnership to help train their new employees in the new work they're going to be doing on the new product. We have a workforce center system in Minnesota where state, local, private nonprofit partners integrate the delivery over 50 federal and state programs. All of you probably have workforce centers in or near your communities. We do adult, youth, dislocated worker, and trade adjustment services, job service, veteran services, rehabilitation services, and state services for the blind.
Commissioner, thank you. Representative Kiefer has a question.
Sure.
Thank you, Chair. 50 federal and state programs seems like a lot, and I'm also sitting in other committees and hearing about other job creation programs. And I also know that there's private companies that also help place people in maybe even a more financially effective way. But anyway, do you have any stats on how many people are in a classroom or a course per these 50? Can you break it down? Like, do you have 200 people at once that you're training, or is it one-on-one, or anything in between?
Bonnie Elsley is our director of our workforce division.
Thank you.
Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record, please.
I'm Bonnie Elsley, the director of the workforce development division, and Representative Guthrie and Representative Kiefer. As far as we served, probably, I'm just guessing now, but these figures will be very close. There was over 300,000 people that came into our workforce centers this past year. And the majority of those do not go on to training. We probably trained about 10 to 15,000 people. And when I say train, I'm talking more about long-term training, not short-term training. We do a lot of short-term training in partnership with adult basic education, for example, that might do literacy training or computer training. We're doing an awful lot of computer training within the workforce centers right now because a lot of people don't know how to use the technology. But I can get you exact figures if you would like.
That would be great. Thank you.
And those 50 programs, you know, we just listed a few. Most of them are federal.
Okay.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Elsie, last year we spoke about certifications and stacking of certifications. And have you made any progress on that at all from last year? Because, I mean, I've seen the governor's workforce report, and they really place a very strong emphasis on that certification and the stacking of certifications and collaboration between Job Skill Partnership, MNSCU, and DEED. Now, could you, in just a 30-second blurb, tell me what's going on?
Yes, Representative Mahoney, that's the way we're operating our adult program right now. What we are trying to do is, not only trying to do, adult basic education, and I incent local areas by giving them some additional resources out of discretionary funds to bring together adult basic ed to teach the literacy component of occupational skills training in a contextualized manner with MNSCU. And then the workforce center themselves pay for the wraparound services like daycare, transportation, and those. But Fast Track is the name of the program. I think it will be up here later. That is the way we try to operate our adult learning for lower literacy customers. And we have been very successful in that, and we're getting more and more programs all the time in that area.
Commissioner. Yeah.
Go ahead and continue. Just put up a slide that shows where the 49 workforce centers are. They're not all the same size. That's one thing I've learned, that there's very small workforce centers in more remote areas, and we base the staffing of these workforce centers based on the need. So they're driven by demand. We provide a lot of services to people with disabilities. Vocational rehabilitation and state services for the blind. We assist people with a disability to help them secure employment, become economically self-sufficient, and live independently in their communities. Vocational rehab is a federal-state partnership that leverages about 3.7 federal dollars for every dollar invested by the state. Up till this time, I'm told that we have always received all our state allocations, so the legislature has stepped up and kept pace with the state money. I mentioned earlier we do the Social Security disability determination. We do over 42,000 determinations every year, and we have been deemed quite accurate by the federal government, which is a testimony to our employees. In addition to our workforce development division, we have tools to facilitate employment. And that's, as I mentioned, that was one of our goals, is to match the, get the employees to enter the workforce. We have MinnesotaWorks.net is our job bank.
Do we have Representative Powell with a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, the slide just before were the 3.7 federal dollars for every dollar invested. Is that separate from the first pie chart where you had $588 million from the federal government?
That number in the different pie chart, Mr. Chairman, Representative House, the number in the pie chart is all the federal programs over the biennium that we do, not just the vocational rehab. That's just a small part of it.
Mr. Chairman, but that small part of it is in the 588. Yes. That's what I wanted to know.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, correct.
Thank you.
The other thing I just want to point out with this MinnesotaWorks.net is this: we've been improving our technology all the time. We're getting people to post their resumes on here. We have the number that I've been quoted is that 40% of the people that have posted on our MinnesotaWorks.net have at least 1 year of college. So we're getting a high quality people posting their resumes on here. It's not just unskilled people. So we're getting people with a lot of skills. We have people with engineering degrees posting their resumes on MinnesotaWorks.net. So part of our goal is to get the word out to employers that this is a good place. And recent statistics say about two-thirds of the people that actually look for employees on there are finding them. So we got to do a better job of getting businesses to go to this source when they're looking for employees. We're also trying to connect our unemployment insurance customers to our MinnesotaWorks.net. So right now what we've been doing is immediately engaging them in that process. So there's no lag time. If they sign up for unemployment, they get connected to the job bank.
Commissioner, how does MinnesotaWorks.net compare with private sites that we have that are available for people to research and find jobs?
I believe there's some connections. Bonnie, you might want to comment on that.
Mr. Chairman, if you let Bonnie make a comment on that again.
The question was the private agencies, is that what your question?
Private job search sites compare with Minnesota Works.
Oh, we have, let me just explain.
Like monster.com.
We have more jobs than they did. Last year we had 410,000 job openings on MinnesotaWorks.net. In Minnesota, there are 123,000 firms, and we have 77,000 firms registered with MinnesotaWorks.net. So there was a lot of job churning going on, even if, you know, there was job losses. A lot of churning always exists in the labor market.
So we're basically doing the same thing that private sites are doing with MinnesotaWorks.net?
The big difference is with our site is they're not duplicate job orders. That we know they're bona fide employers. We check that they have an employer account number with the unemployment insurance system. We don't take duplicate orders. When you go to a private job site, you might find many of those job orders if they screen their spam their websites and scrape their websites. You may get the same job orders over and over. Ours are not duplicate. We make sure that each job opening is a bona fide job opening.
Representative Mahoney, you got a question?
Is Minnesota, thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Elsie, is that Minnesota Works, your job applicant site, is that primarily federal funds, state funds, or some combination of both? And if it is a combination, what's the percentage?
100% federal. It's part of the job service money, the labor exchange system that's funded by the federal Wagner-Peiser Act.
Mr. Chair, not to Ms. Elsie, but for the newer members on the committee, that is such a, I'll have to be nice here, that is such a snake pit of rules and regulations that it might be good for you to provide new members of the committee, all members of the committee, a kind of an outline of what the rules and regulations are on that Peiser-Peisner Workforce Act, because that we tried to do some stuff with that last year and it was very difficult to change that around or do anything with it. So,
Ms. Elsie.
Yes, the Wagner-Peiser Act has been around since 1933. And the allowable, first of all, the Wagner-Peiser staff, it only can be used for staff and a labor exchange system, which can be this electronic tool. It cannot be used to pay for training or services to customers. It is tried, the dollars themselves are to help businesses find qualified workers and then for job seekers to receive career counseling and guidance and job leads and job referrals. And that is what the dollars are for.
Mr. Representative Leidiger.
Well, I wanted to go back, Mr. Chairman, a little bit on these, on the private websites, too. And do you know if they receive federal dollars? Like, does the monster.com
No.
able to go and get grant dollars to run their outfit?
No. As far as I know, they do. I know they don't from the Department of Labor. The Department of Labor had a national labor exchange system, and a couple of years ago they did away with it. And so we have partnered, state agencies across the country have partnered with a private nonprofit job board called Job Central. And so we take uploads and downloads from them every day. So we know, and we also take uploads and downloads from them on cities that are border cities. Like, for example, we want in our job bank jobs from Superior, Wisconsin, and we want jobs in our job bank from Fargo because they're border cities and people, you know, commute across the border. So we have some of those in the job bank also.
That answer. One more on that. Do employers have to pay to get on the job bank or the MinnesotaWorks.net, or do individuals have to pay to post their resumes?
Individuals never pay. Employers pay through their federal unemployment insurance tax at the federal level. On the Federal Unemployment Insurance Tax Act actually pays for the administration of unemployment insurance, Wagner-Peiser, and labor market information. So, I mean, there's always some way everything is paid for. It's not totally free, but it when an employer posts a job in there, they don't pay any additional money. They pay it through their tax at the federal level.
Okay.
Commissioner?
Okay.
Just in case.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, just to continue on, we have a job stat tool. It's something a little bit newer. This is where you can actually, it's a tool where you can put in your specific job skills, and it'll match you up with the employment opportunities that are available in the labor market right now. And it's kind of a new tool that we're finding to be very effective.
Mr. Representative Stenzers has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It actually is a follow-up regarding the MinnesotaWorks.net. Are there other states who also do this? I'm wondering if that's sort of a cookie-cutter approach that the feds offer.
Every state has their own state job bank, and the majority of the states are a part of this partnership with direct employers. So every state kind of builds the design of their own job bank, and we purchased the search engine from a company called Burning Glass and built the system around it.
Okay. And just one follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Central.
I'm just curious, you know, with the, in the web market right now, is there a certain budget, annual budget that you're working with, or is there, we're getting federal dollars.
Right.
I'm just wondering how much federal dollars do we get for this?
We don't get it for this. We get $12 million for a labor exchange system, which is staff and technology together. So it doesn't say so much is for staff, so much is for technology. But, you know, we have invested in technology because we never have enough staff to be able to match people with jobs.
Thank you.
Commissioner?
The last one on the list is Fast Track. This is training resources and credentialing. And this is a program, a collaborative effort with MinSCU and other community-based organizations, Adult Basic Ed, to help adults with skill enhancements, credentialing to make them more attractive to prospective employers. So you have a low-skilled individual, you try to get them that basic education and training that can get them up to snuff to get them into the workforce. And this has been a terrific collaborative effort, with particularly with MinSCU. I happened to have a brief meeting with the outgoing chancellor at MinSCU, and he told me that during this transitional time when the new chancellor is coming in, he'd like to spend more effort on this during his final months on the job. So we're looking forward to that interaction.
Representative Clark, you have a question?
Thank you. Commissioner, the
fast track training that's available through Minsky. How long a time can a person go to that kind of training? What do we have a time limit on it? Number of months? A certain level of degree?
Representative Clark, there is no time frame on it. It depends upon the curriculum, the program, and basic literacy training is always included in that also with adult basic ed. They're usually shorter programs, 6 months or less, but they are what is building that career pathway for an individual to get from where they have no job and no skills to start getting into a career pathway that they can keep adding, and that's the whole stack of credential thing that Representative Mahoney was talking about.
Mr. Chairman, I was just thinking, like, in the whole healthcare field where, you know, some of the nursing assistants' jobs are such low wages that people can't really live on them if they have a family. So in terms of that kind of situation, is it possible for a person to upgrade their skills who is, like, say, in a nursing assistant to go part-time to get towards maybe a LPN or eventually an RN? Is that built into this yet, or is it limited, like, once you get?
No, it is not limited, Representative Clark. This is a program that you can keep adding on to your skills. We've had people who have been working as nurse aides who go into medical billing coding because there's a pretty big need for that. But you could go on the RN track or the LPN track. So it's a matter of, are there openings? Not job openings, but training openings and funding. Those are the key issues around that. And then also, we've been working hard with the colleges to get more evening and weekend and online curriculum, because adults, you know, can't necessarily go to school Monday through Friday full time.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess this is my first time on this committee, so bear with me. I'm wondering about the fast track, the training resources that you work with MNSCU. Then, how is the tuition paid? Do we pay the tuition, or is it do they take out a college loan, or how does that work?
The tuition is paid for with a combination of Pell Grants, if they're eligible for a Pell Grant, and we adult dollars, or it could be state or federal dislocated worker dollars.
Okay. See, no more questions, Commissioner? Maybe we'll get through you.
Mr. Chairman, I'll just keep going on the workforce side. The services we provide to businesses, this is the Job Skills Partnership. Fiscal year 10, we did 49 grants totaling $7.3 million, about $16 million in private business match for the job skills, and we trained about 13,437 people. Again, a lot of these are customized training opportunities for companies that are actually trying to upgrade people's skills to make them more productive and increase employment opportunities. We also have a program called GATE, is Growing America Through Entrepreneurship, where we encourage people coming off unemployment to perhaps get into an entrepreneurial endeavor. The next area is our business services area. We have people in the workforce centers that go out and meet with businesses to find out what kind of assistance they need in possibly recruitment, retention, or training options. And they had about over 7,000 interactions last year with businesses in the near the workforce centers. I'm just going to touch briefly on our unemployment insurance program.
Commissioner, we did have a very thorough hearing on unemployment insurance. I can't believe the interest the members took in unemployment insurance. So we're looking forward to hearing your twist on.
Well, I'm going to be brief. I might bring Craig up here. There's obviously going to be questions, but our activity level last year, we served over 370,000 unemployed customers. We paid about $2.8 billion in unemployment benefits, about $1.25 billion in state funds, and a little over $1.5 billion in federal money. 85 to 90% of applicants' customers use online technology. If we wouldn't have invested in online technology and unemployment insurance, we would have lines around buildings. Because with this recession, the kind of activity we had. So that was a very good investment, just like it was in the job bank. It's a good investment in unemployment insurance. 132,000 employers paid about $900 million in Minnesota unemployment insurance taxes. We're currently borrowing from the federal government along with 31 other states. Minnesota's current balance of money we owe in the federal government is about $609 million. Just to put that in perspective, Wisconsin owes the Fed about $1.4 billion at this time. In 2011, our unemployment tax receipts are projected to exceed the 2011 benefit payouts. So we're going to begin paying back the federal government in 2011. And we're projected to have a positive balance in our fund based on current projections of unemployment rates and things to be out of debt with the feds by 2013. And those projections that actually improved are where we thought it was going to be at this time a year ago. 2002 legislative actions automatically addressing trust fund deficit. So now this automatically kicks in. So we borrow from the feds, we adjust the premiums, we get back out of debt. So we have questions at the end here. And just a quick slide on this. The first 26 weeks are the state out of the state fund only, and then there's four different tranches of federal. We call them tiers, I guess. There's a 20-week tier one, a 14-week tier two, and a 13-week tier three, where the federal government is paying it, and there's an additional 13-week federal state extended benefits, and that brings you that you, if you qualify all the way along the line, that you can get up to 86 weeks of unemployment insurance in Minnesota right now. With that, we can take questions. I brought Craig Gustafson up in our unemployment insurance area because you said you had a lot of interest in that. If there's questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Chris, Representative Wazinski.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Phillips, you talked about the unemployment payment kind of switching gears in order to kind of maybe accelerate that repayment. Is there a time or a date that is set to start repayment, or does it kind of trigger at a certain amount of
Mr.
service that needs to be done? Or?
Mr. Chair, Representative
Swazinski.
Swazinski. I guess I need to have you clarify your question as far as paying back the trust fund deficit. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, I had read an article to clarify a little bit, talking about how that will switch and increase to a certain point for employers to repay that back for a period of time or something like that. Am I correct in that? Or?
Mr. Chair, yes. Representative, that's correct. The federal tax will go up starting in... I'm not sure exactly when that will start. Maybe I'd have defer to Keith Goodwin. He's our unemployment insurance director. He knows the details of the repayment of the trust fund much better than I do. So if that's okay, Mr. Chair, I'd have Keith Goodwin.
Welcome to our committee, Mr. Goodwin.
Pleasure to be back here from last 2 weeks ago. Essentially, we're an experience-rated system, so... what happens is that, Mr. Chair, is that the rates were going to be going up. It's a four-year look-back process. So as we get into what is called charges that go against employers for benefits paid, those will be assessed against them. And so there's a formula that increases the taxable charges and the taxes that are paid. It's benefits over payroll. And so what happens over a period of time is that increases. And that's really the vehicle by which the fund is replenished. As the fund is replenished, we sweep out the funds, as we talked a couple weeks ago. The funds are swept out to pay the trust fund, to pay the federal balance down. So really, it's happening all the time. For example, every day, We just finished the fourth quarter filing of wage detail. So my guess is, I haven't seen the data for last week yet, we probably owe less last week, at the end of last week, than we did the week before. But the trend lines are very, very good. I don't want to ever say $600 million is good, but it's compared to where we thought we would be. So that's, I hope that answers your question.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Kirk, you were first, right?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Mr. Phillips. Mm-hmm. On page 17, you spoke about the business services and over 7,000 business consultations that you had provided. I'm just curious if you ever, how you measure the effectiveness of that program, and is there any way to speak to any outcomes, or is there any kind of report that shows what do we get for that?
I'm going to bring Ms. Elsie back up, because these are offered, these are, you know, we use the term business services a couple times in this presentation. One is from our Business and Community Development Division, but we also, these are services, business services offered by our workforce center, so I just want Bonnie to comment on that.
Yes. Representative Gethin, and I didn't get your name, Representative, I can't.
Stansford.
Okay. These staff call on businesses for a specific purpose, and that the purpose that they call on them for is to find out, are they finding qualified applicants? Are they having trouble retaining their people? Because some employers do have a lot of turnover, so we try to sit down with them and show them the cost of turnover. Sometimes their turnover is because they're not paying a competitive wage, so then we'll show them the labor market information on similar organizations as them and show them what they're paying. And so we try to do those kinds of consultations. And then sometimes they're talking about expansion, and right away we hook them up with the economic development people, both at the local level and at the state. And if they have training needs, we'll bring in customized training. So what we have as far as success is we do an employer survey every single year and ask the employers that we visited how they feel about the services. And 96% of them said that they would definitely want an employer service rep to call on them again, because they are meeting their needs and hooking them up to the right resources they need to grow their business.
Thank you. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Commissioner Phillips, I have an unemployment question, so you may want to bring up your unemployment person again.
One thing we have to do is give your name for the record.
I'm sorry, Keith Goodwin, Director of the Unemployment Insurance Program.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Goodwin, I want to make sure I understand, but before you give me the number of the benefit, I wanted to ask, do you know how many people are at a zero experience rating and therefore would pay the 0.05%?
We looked at that, Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill. We looked at that last week, and in Minnesota there's about 132,000 total employers. Some of them are reimbursing employers, meaning they pay their charges quarterly, state government 501c3s. The taxpaying employers, of which there would be some number, I want to say around 125,000 to 130,000, about 62,000 of them are minimum rated employers. Now, they tend to be smaller. They don't have, which means that when they're minimum rated, it means they've had no charges against their account the preceding 4 years, is what it means, essentially.
All right, Mr. Chairman. So you're saying that of, I'll hold you to gunshot aim here, all the total employer base in the state, that 62,000 of them are at the 0.05, which would, my math works out to be $130 a year. Into the unemployment pool,
well,
per employee.
Yeah, minimum rated employer at it's a little different. It's 0.05 is what is known as the base rate. Mm-hmm. When we're in deficit, we have a special added a surcharge. So actually, it turns out the math is very close to 0.7 right now because of the surcharges, the dislocated worker fund, but it's in the range as you're talking about 135 with the surcharges, 180 or so.
The last question. Does the $140 pay for the administration? for those 62,000 employers, or so are we a net loss on those for doing such a good job? I'm if you follow my question.
Yeah. The administration of the UI program is paid out of the Federal Unemployment Tax Act funds that employers pay as to the federal government. So for those that we talked 2 weeks ago, you pay a percentage. It's a formula. The federal government, and a slice of that formula comes back to administer the unemployment insurance program, also WEO programs. And if we're not in a big recession, it is really the funding source from which the states borrow. But that has been depleted. That's why they're going to general operating funds at the federal level. Did that answer your question, sir?
Thank you.
Representative Mulry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, this is on an issue that the chair has been quite helpful. And I won't say Deed has been helpful. That, definitely not. We have unemployment in the area of 30-40% in some of the communities of color. And to me, it seems appalling, but the state doesn't is one of the worst employers in the state as far as meeting the goals. Also, we don't have a lot of programs which help get people into things. Last year, for instance, the committee that the chair was on passed a bill that would have helped the immigrant Asian community getting into jobs. And the governor vetoed it based on recommendation of the agency that they already had it. And when we talked to the Workforce Center director in Minneapolis, she said, no, there's absolutely nothing like that in existence. So we've not had a lot of help. A lot of things, I've looked at other states, their agencies that are similar to yours. And believe me, I'm not blaming you because I recognize nothing about you on this. The other states do such things as providing a bonding program, insurance programs for these minority contractors that have trouble meeting the guidelines. They have mentoring programs, which are, we have apparently a little bit of mentoring programs, but very little, nothing like other states. And then also, as far as training people for these jobs, we have not gotten very good cooperation, to say the least, from the department, I don't think, in the past on this. And other agencies even point to Deed as having to step up. So I guess I don't expect you to be answering this, but can we see a little bit better? It's to all of our benefits if these people are getting good jobs and paying good taxes and things like that. So I just hope that, and maybe this is a statement, I hope that under your new leadership we can do more of that. Other states are doing way beyond what we're doing on this, and even when other agencies like to blame each other, but a number of them point their finger at Deed, and I've seen some problems there in the past. So,
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to comment. This was brought up in the Senate committee as well, and so I'm going to be looking into what we're offering, what we're not offering, where we're falling down. I spent the last 6 years working in the construction industry, and there are things, you know, can be done. Some of the cities have done it in Minnesota. They require a certain amount of minority participation, and that forced construction companies like the one I worked for to step up and do some mentoring that, you know, so there are ways to encourage this activity, and I'm game to get on the and get on that if we can figure out something that makes a lot, you know, economic sense and can help the minority population. We'll look into it. I plan on meeting with all the committee members I can. It's going to take me a little while to get around, but I've already setting up some appointments already. And maybe I can, in the interim, before I meet with you, I'll certainly look into this issue.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, and I think you'll find this chair on this committee has been very helpful on this issue in the past also. Okay. And the Met Council is way beyond the state on this issue, Minneapolis, St. Paul, the MAC.
Yep.
So it's about time the state starts waking up, and a lot of them, as I say, seem to point to you as the biggest problem. Okay. Not you, but the agency.
Representative Leidiger.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I want to, it's okay, Commissioner, and I know you're doing this, but I want to ask questions about the workforce centers. I'm just wondering if we would be in this business if we didn't get the federal dollars, because there are a lot of staffing companies that are out there, the recruiting companies, the websites that we talked about, the community colleges, a lot in the private sector doing a lot of this work, a lot of good work. So I guess I'll have two questions then. Number one, just how many people do we place? Does the workforce centers place? And secondly, what are we doing to work with the private sector? I mean, do we do any outreach and coordination, or what are we doing there?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to have Bonnie comment, but just in a general sense, we are working. I met with the temp agencies this morning, but I'll let Bonnie elaborate on the exact numbers and things.
Representative Gunther and a representative, I can't see your name.
You just call me Ernie.
Okay.
No. I'm the only Ernie in the room, I'll bet.
I can tell you that the workforce centers could not exist without partnerships. That's what it's all about. About 20% of our job openings that we had from without uploading and downloading from direct employers on our job bank came from temp agencies. And temp agencies, a few of them have rented space in our workforce centers. They always come in and are like what we call business of the day. We have a business come in, and they can interview anybody that walks in that day, and we promote that, what businesses is going to be there. So they come into our centers all the time as business of the day. They always work with us on job fairs. When we set up job fairs, the temp agencies are always there and have booths. So we work with the temp agencies a lot, because we know that today about 50% of the temp jobs end up being permanent. So temp to perm is a really big thing, and there are many companies that will not ever hire you if you don't start out as a temporary. So we make sure that our people know that. I would have to get, since we are such a silo-funded organization, I mean, we have a program for this and a program for that, I would have to go through all the programs to tell you how many people we have placed. But I can tell you that the workforce centers wouldn't exist without federal funds and partnerships. There's just not enough state money in operating the workforce center systems. And the workforce centers also run a Minnesota Family Investment Program. Most of them have the TANF, the federal TANF, which in Minnesota is MFIP. And those are operated usually by private nonprofit organizations within our workforce centers.
Thank you.
Yep. Representative Kiefer.
Oh, hi. I'm going to change gears a little bit and go back to something that then candidate Dayton, now Governor Dayton, said back in September, I think, that he was actually looking to have some solutions to the budget. One of his ideas was to absolutely eliminate the Minnesota Trade Office. Do you have any comment on that, or do you think that was a good idea, or you got it in your presentation here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I never heard him, that he made that statement, and not to me, certainly not to me. In fact, he's been encouraging me to work with our new trade director, Katie Clark, to, I don't know if Katie's here. No, she had to leave. To encourage to make sure we're following up on the transactions that were initiated during the previous trade missions and everything. So I know he wants to make sure that we're utilizing the efforts and expenditures that have been made already to make sure that we're following up and getting those done. And then we're looking at some new opportunities with the Middle East and possibly India. And we've been encouraged by some of the private business groups, the Itasca Group and that, to look at Brazil as another possible trading partner. But I think there's two things. One is the whole exports getting Minnesota business to export increases their opportunity to be successful. So there's not that's something that I know the trade office, I know the governor supports. In addition, there hasn't been a lot of effort in recent years, but back when I was involved in the, I call it the Purpich years, there was a lot of effort in reverse investment. And a lot of the business expansions in Minnesota recently have been companies from that are foreign-owned that operate in Minnesota. So I don't think, you know, closing the trade office. But in general, the being more efficient in government, you know, we have continuous improvement programs at DEED. Are we perfect? No, but we're working on trying to improve our efficiencies and getting better at delivering these services. I know this whole workforce center is very complex. It's a lot of federal programs and everything. We're constantly looking at how can we deliver these things in a more economic way. And we know we're going to have to do more with less resources. And again, if we hadn't invested in technology, I don't know how we would have delivered his unemployment insurance during this recession. So we appreciate the comments on that. We want to get better.
We got Representative Clark and Mahoney, and then we have Enterprise Minnesota. So make it short, please, so we can hear what they have to say.
Thank you. Maybe some of this can come in our visit together. I look forward to meeting with you, Commissioner Phillips. I do have a question, though, and one of the things I was going to ask you about was the renovating of homes and the whole housing portion of the agency. Maybe I'll save that for our visit since we have limited time, but I do want to follow up on a trend of discussion I thought I was hearing here about the benefit of private agencies doing the job recruiting and so on. I think anybody who's worked for a temp agency knows that they take a bite, a private temp agency, they take a bite out of your salary. Mm-hmm. I know as a nurse, I think the agency, home agency I was working for, charged twice what I was being paid by, what I brought home. I don't know if that's, I think it's improved somewhat, but I'm not sure, and I know that we have huge temp agencies in Minnesota who operate that way. So I'm just wondering if you might make a point sometime of creating a chart or something that shows us what the benefits and drawbacks are from the private versus the public job banks, how they operate. And I'm interested to hear that some of our employers now require temporary agency placement first. I wonder what kind of deal that is. I just have some questions about this that have been raised by our discussion today, so I'd be interested in some report on that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, I think some of that's anecdotal that we're seeing, that some employers would rather take on an employee on a temporary basis, on a temp agency basis, before they buy in and make them a permanent employee. I think that's anecdotal. I don't know if we have the statistics, but we can certainly look into it before our visit.
And Commissioner,
I don't know if I have another comment on that really right now.
We are going to have the temp agency come in with the bill later.
Sure.
And Representative Mahoney and then McFarland.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. Actually, my concern was same as Representative Clark's, and I would love to see that information presented to the whole committee about what the cost is. It's been 30 years since I used any kind of a temp agency, and the amount they took out of my pocket, well, we won't talk about that. But as to finish up Representative Kiefer's comments, the governor did at that point say that he wanted to close down the trade office, but to finish that off, he was bringing it into his office, in the governor's office. Now, I don't know if that's ever been completed or not, but that's something for a later time that you can tell us.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if that requires a comment. I have not been instructed that the trade office is still in deed at this time.
Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Glad to have you here, Commissioner Phillips. Couple things. I was looking at your background. I didn't realize I knew your wife. So that was kind of interesting. But when we talk about economic development strategies, I think we need to talk about the correlation between education, K-12 on up, and how it relates to the economic development of the state and so and producing our future workforce. And I was glad to hear that you talked about Chancellor from Minsku and hear talk with him. I'm hoping with your connections that maybe we could have a broader discussion between all of the different groups, the K-12, the higher ed, and DEED, on conversations about our future workforce.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McFarland. Everybody comes to these jobs with different biases, and I think that there needs to be a broader discussion about education, but not only, a little bit in K-12, but also in technical education versus college education. A lot of the jobs being created are in technical education. Mm-hmm. I have a son who went that route, and he's very employable, probably more employable than the rest of the members of our family in a lot of respects. So I always say he's the one that really knows how to do something. But I think that kind of alignment with MinSCU and the technical side, the college side, where are we educating our people in the right things? The other thing is, I didn't go into my whole resume, but I spent about 6.5-7 years in community development venture capital, where we did startup companies. And so that I have a kind of a bias about technology transfer. So a lot of the things that are going on, at the university, there's a lot of technologies developed. So one of the things that I've been saying that I'm interested in working on, so I mentioned the authority that was set up on technology and science, very interested in that, because I'm seeing that companies, startups are occurring elsewhere. There's less venture capital being invested in Minnesota. Before, we were one of the top 4 or 5 in the country 20 years ago, and we're not that anymore. So working on that front is something I'm going to be involved in.
Thank you very much. A very good presentation, and I appreciate it. And we're looking forward to working with you very much. And with that, we have Enterprise Minnesota and Mr. Kill. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members.
Would you give your name for the record?
My name is Bob Kill. I'm the president of Enterprise Minnesota. And it's with great anticipation that I pass on some of my passionate comments about manufacturing and its value to the state of Minnesota. If I could start with some comments on the value of manufacturing to our state. There are 8,000 manufacturers. They pay 20% more than the private sector in general. 12 to 13% of the jobs, 15 to 16% of the payroll. That is a 20% delta. And for every job in manufacturing, there's 2 related jobs. We're lucky in this state, different from a lot of the states, to have a very diversified manufacturing. And I would like to clear up that manufacturers are not blacksmith shops. Minnesota has very high, Representative Mahoney, I like Boilermakers and appreciate your support in the past. But I would stress that we have a very diversified agricultural products, food processing and packaging, forestry. Much of the employment related to forestry is in taking the raw products and turning it into something. I mentioned medical device, mining. So the diversity has allowed our manufacturing to weather the last 2 years better than others. So why manufacturing? First of all, a little bit of my background. I've been in manufacturing my entire life. I'm from Greater Minnesota, so I have an interesting passion of metropolitan-based manufacturing and the value as it gets further and further from metropolitan. I would also state that I'm not related to the new football coach unless he wins. But long ago in my manufacturing career, I learned the very powerful connection of the public and private sector, and that's really what Enterprise Minnesota is. We are a standalone 501c3 nonprofit that lives by the mantra of helping manufacturing enterprises grow profitably. And we do cover the entire state of Minnesota. Many of the competitive organizations that try to work with smaller manufacturers are independent, and the governors on their car don't work well outside the metropolitan area. And 35 to 40% of manufacturing is outside the 5-county metropolitan area. So the value of manufacturing to a rural community like Harmony, Black Duck, East Grand Forks, Morris, Marshall, Walker is just absolutely huge, absolutely huge, and could never be discounted as to what it really does for that local economy. Enterprise Minnesota is a small group of people who believe passionately in manufacturing. And we do it through business consulting and services that we provide to small, medium-sized manufacturers. We do not work with manufacturers over 500 employees, which is, by the way, the bulk of virtually all the employees. All the manufacturing employees are in companies of that size or smaller. We do a lot in the area of visibility. I see some of you looking at the magazine that we publish. I always kind of smile when we have a manufacturing month in the end of the year, because we celebrate the success of manufacturing six times a year in our magazine. We're always looking for stories of great success that other manufacturers might emulate. The public and private connection that we do with our clients, since late 2008, I personally have been inside of 74 manufacturers, some of them with people right in this room. And that encompasses about 120 to 125 elected officials or their staff, both at the state and federal level. I can say that Congressman Paulson and Senator Klobuchar use our organization extensively to plan visits. And just last Saturday, Senator Klobuchar visited a medical device and aerospace manufacturing company in Monticello. And due to our relationship, they were very willing to keep a shift going on a Saturday for that, so they could show the ingenuity, the inventiveness, et cetera, that company provides for their workers. But lastly, and somewhat most important, is we measure the results of our consulting. We are part of a federal program that exists within the Department of Commerce called NIST-MEP. MEP stands for Manufacturing Extension Partnership. In order to be the accredited affiliate for the state of Minnesota, all of our clients agree that when we provide them any kind of operational excellence or business growth services, that they will complete an independent, confidential survey 6 to 12 months later for that service. And that service and that survey is intended to clarify retained and created jobs, top-line growth, bottom-line improvement, equipment purchases, etc. But in the past 3 years, of course, the common denominator has been retained and created jobs. These are very powerful in that it really ties the public and private connection closely together. The other thing that we want to talk about is the public and private connection. 4 years ago, as a pilot, thanks to the support of Representative Mahoney and the Senate side, Senate Tomasoni, they came up with a program, the Growth Acceleration Program, often referred to as GAP. The Growth Acceleration Program was a one-for-one match of growth services. So if a client did an assessment and discovery and said, I want to do these three services, and in doing that, investing not in equipment, can't go out and buy equipment, but investing in their people and their business, once they complete the service and pay for it, they could get a rebate of up to 50% of that. In the first year, that service touched 110 companies across the state of Minnesota. Based on its success 2 years ago, and I think we all are cognizant of the budget challenges of 2 years ago, they found another $1 million to continue the program. And since that time, we've almost doubled the number of companies that have taken advantage of that. And we've brought CEOs in numerous times to testify, because it's a lot more powerful than listening to me talk about it. But I think it's a great opportunity to think about how public and private connections can work. If there's a commitment, a financial pain, and a lot of time by the client that matches or exceeds what the public dollars are, there is a commitment on that company to continue the journey. to retain jobs during the past 2 years, which has been very challenging, and to add jobs, which our State of Manufacturing Survey, and I think if you haven't seen the book that's published in 2010, but 2011 will warrant the fact that some of these investments are now paying off with not only job retention, but job growth. So the outreach, bringing the visibility as to the value of manufacturing, but also convincing this private sector that typically isn't good at doing outreach to connect the private and public is very, very important. Our organization is comprised of a small number of very passionate people who have been in manufacturing their entire life. If we leave with one thing today, it's that, one, manufacturing of the modern day needs to attract younger people to its workforce because it is the lifeblood of many, many communities across the state. And equally important, when they invest because they want to stay in that community. I don't know how many people know where Harmony, Minnesota is, but Harmony Enterprises employs 70 people. Behind every Walmart is a trash compactor built by this workforce. This workforce competes, must pay benefits comparable to the Mayo Clinic, because the Mayo Clinic bus picks up people in the south of their community and tracks them to Rochester. This is one of the challenges. Would they ever move from Harmony? They wouldn't think of it. But I think the second biggest employer in Harmony, Minnesota, probably is the pie shop. And that doesn't pay what they pay at Harmony Enterprises. It's one example. Ideal Aerosmith in East Grand Forks. Can't tell you how many times they've been wooed by the state of North Dakota to move across. And they wouldn't think of it because of their workforce. They're building very sophisticated guidance systems for Honeywell, which go into aerospace applications. Alexandria, Minnesota, kind of the center of the food packaging industry. Douglas, Agard, Delcor, the list goes on. You know, it's kind of the Silicon Valley of it. Very underappreciated companies, but very sophisticated, high-value manufacturing. That's the new manufacturing. If I could shift back to just the public and private connection, in the previous presentation I saw talked a little bit about the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership, and we are an accredited Minnesota Job Skills Partnership certified organization. And two examples of how we've used it to connect the public and private. First of all, I want to point out that we would never do a grant unless 50% of the cash coming into it is from the company. That's what it takes to get the commitment. But if you can get 2-for-1 return, that's still a pretty good return. One of the grants that we got was called Green Lean, and we will begin the trademark of it. 5 foundries, 2 in St. Paul, 1 in Minneapolis, 1 in Le Sueur, and 1 in Mankato have taken advantage of that to bring green manufacturing processes into the foundry industry. Because that is one industry that's really being challenged to convince young people to come to work for them. As much as I may say it's about medical device manufacturing, there still is that kind of manufacturing, and they need to embrace green processes. But I should point out that they already recycle 80% of their waste. Their goal is to recycle or reuse 100% of it. That's really the goal of the grant. Very powerful grant, and as time goes on, it'll be really a great story. It's been in the national press already, because when you connect green manufacturing to the foundry industry, people do frown. But we're committed to that kind of improvement within these businesses because they're very important to our state. We just received a federal grant to work with 10 companies across the state, from all the way from Albert Lea to the north. And again, the companies are putting an extensive amount of cash into it, and it's kind of a graduate program for some of the better companies. But the bulk of them, only one of them is from the metro area, the rest are from around the state. Again, the lifeblood of the community. We believe very strongly in the manufacturing. It is a job creator. It is a job retainer. And for every hour you drive from the metropolitan area, it becomes more and more critical for those jobs and those companies. So I want to thank you for the Growth Acceleration Program. It, I think, has been a phenomenal program. It's been a great marriage of private business with public to create results, and I think equally as important, to try to measure those results and try to measure how we've spent the public dollars. With that, I would take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Kill. Would anybody like to ask a question? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kill, could you, I believe there's state and federal dollars in your organization. Am I correct?
The state does not give us any direct operating funding. The money we get from the state is through applying for a grant, like I talked about. As part of the federal program, a very small percentage of our direct costs to provide what I would call below market rates for small manufacturers is reimbursed through this manufacturing extension partnership if we attain 100% results on the survey.
So excluding the private dollars that the manufacturer comes up with, could you give me an idea of percentage of state or federal dollars just as an overall? I mean, sure. Do you do 50% state, 50% federal funding for all of your activities?
Well, let me start from the top. Great question, Representative Mahoney. We provide about $2.5 million of services to the small, medium manufacturers a year. That's the top line revenue from that. Of that, a granting this year will make up about $500,000. And the bulk of that this year is Minnesota Job Skills Partnership grant for about 15 companies. The federal government will pay us up to 29% of our direct costs incurred in that. It could be as much as $2 million paid back for to work with small manufacturers of which you're charging below market rate.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Have you heard anything about federal dollars and if they're going to continue or they've been put on the chopping block?
Mr. Kill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, yes, unfortunately, the MEP program is always, it seems like it's always on the chopping block. It's probably more vulnerable right now than it has been for a long time. It would be, to say the word detrimental to our organization, it would probably be close to the death knell 2 years from now.
Thank you. Any other questions? With that, I'd like to thank you, Mr. Kill, for your presentation. Is there any other business? If not, meeting is adjourned.